Chapter 5. After re-recording his song with Atman, LP returned home for a break. As he rode his bike along the busy streets, his mind drifted to thoughts of why he felt so passionate about music. There had been a point in his life where he was very particular about what he listened to, but these days, he had a tendency to try to listen to most things at least once. LP wasn't quite what therapist types might call a melomaniac, or someone with a great enthusiasm for music, but he'd certainly qualify as a bit of a fanatic. Good music, bad music, fucking awesome music, tunes that punched you in the groin, songs that made you laugh, or cry, or both, concordant, discordant, sometimes even just a buzz or a drone. He loved it all. Music always gave him a sense of stability, a feeling that the universe was still vibrating just for him. John, Paul, George, and Ringo live at Budokan, ska, punk, 70s glam, and 80s new romantics, shoegazer, jazz, classical, ABBA to Zappa, U2, Radiohead, Taylor Swift, Ed Sheeran, Madchester, Oasis, Blur, Wilco, The National, Primal Scream, The Manic Street Preachers. The list seemed endless. He could pick any range of emotion from any era, and it would dovetail with his current state of mind. When he was a kid in the early 80s, his range of music knowledge was pretty tight, only because the only bands he learned about were top 40 and approved by the FCC as family-friendly. At the time, he didn't know that his was the last generation of kids that would be spoon-fed songs from an industry that was hungry to have him buy vinyl, tapes, and then CDs. Of course, online streaming platforms do exactly that, but you can still do deep dives elsewhere. Once he got a little cash of his own, he'd agonize over which albums to buy. London Calling versus Synchronicity, Revolver or Sticky Fingers. Ultimately, it didn't matter. The losing choice would be scooped up later when he had more cash. Each time he slapped his new vinyl onto his Panasonic turntable, he'd crank the music just a little too loud, lean back in his chair, and pore over the liner notes, always rejoicing when lyrics were printed in full. After memorizing the poetry and every beat of a song, he'd absorb obscure details like backup singer names, recording dates, producer names, supporting band members, and more. He'd always be careful to use only the best Mylar sleeves to keep his collection pristine. And on some occasions, he'd even pull out a pair of gloves to make sure his fingerprints didn't get everywhere. A forensic anthropologist would have taken great pride in how careful LP was with his growing collection. He had had influences from current music, but he had also grown up being inundated with blasts from the past, soundtracks for people who were twice his age. He took an odd enjoyment from the idea that he could name an older person's favorite bands, while they were clueless about his. These days, LP was delighted with the idea that he no longer had to travel with binders full of CDs or cassette tapes piled in the passenger seat. Instead, he had an old phone that he'd updated with a 2 terabyte memory card, which had about 250,000 songs on it. He had created about 80 of his own playlists to cover every mood, decade, style, and genre of music. These kinds of options were unfathomable in the days preceding digital. In 1997, his first MP3 player was a long way from the Walkman he'd owned just a few years before. It was a homemade player, constructed out of a portable drive, with a USB connection for charging and connecting to a sound system, and a cheap set of headphones for when he wasn't in his car. He made the outrageous and unprovable claim that it was copied as a prototype for the iPod, but he was at least smart enough to know that it would be impossible to challenge a company as successful as Apple. In the world of dog-eat-dog capitalism, he was a constant reminder that the world rewarded those that implemented ideas, not talked about them. His next investment in something related to music was, ironically, an iPod. He was able to dump his favorite albums and artists onto it, but he still had a ton of space left, so he began downloading and started researching every band that was within 6 degrees of his favorite styles. He was always amazed by the volume of music he'd missed as a kid, but he made up for it once he'd begun his sleuthing. Out of the multitudes of music genres, he could zero in on a specific tune, and the artist would speak to him and him only. "You can't buy that kind of reliability," he'd tell himself. "A tune that carves right into your heart or pumps it full of joy will stay with you longer than any partner ever will." A song is such a simple thing, really. Some made him laugh, others made him angry or reduced him to tears, like when he was a little kid and a neighborhood friend died. He had gone to the funeral, and the songs that he heard that day were welded to his DNA and would stay with him in that context until he vanished from the earth. Songs joined him sometimes when he went to the movies. They were in the malls singing to him, and sometimes he'd sing right back, unconcerned about the people who were watching him as he made a duet into a trio or transformed quartets into quintets. He loved music, but even though he tried, he was never that great at playing anything, despite possessing a near-encyclopedic knowledge of the world of pop tunes. He'd log into chat rooms and sites like songmeanings.com and post comments about favorite bands, looking for interpretations of his most beloved but still mysterious songs. Or he'd go to sites that offered sounds like references, and every new diversion from a band or genre would create a ball of musical roots that would hold up a 400-foot-tall tree. And what did he need now? Recently, he'd been on a bit of a kick with songs related to animals, or done by bands named after animals. The list was surprisingly long, from obvious examples like The Beatles, Echo, and The Bunnymen, and A Flock of Seagulls to more current groups like Fleet Foxes, Caribou, Arctic Monkeys, Gorillas, Band of Horses, The Fruit Bats, and Plants and Animals, with a current favorite being the prolific King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. LP didn't know what had inspired his latest obsession. Maybe it was when he heard that the song of the Hawaiian honeycreeper bird had changed in response to a dwindling population. Its song was now one of what many believed was one of sadness, as opposed to a mating call. This discovery had taken him down the proverbial rabbit hole, where he'd learned that many scientists, biologists, and recording experts were working on identifying and tracking the histories of the different music and songs of various species of the Earth. He learned about people like Bernie Krause, one of the leading experts behind the popularity of Moog synthesizers, another invention that changed what we listen to. Krause went on to record a wild array of animals everywhere, including many that were facing extinction. On several occasions, his recordings were enough to convince planners and developers to ease up on disruptive terraforming projects. In time, LP knew that he would try to integrate some of these new animal orchestras into some of his own work, but he wanted to start by just trying to finesse some of the ideas that he had developed during the long and lonely days of the COVID-19 pandemic.